Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Carriad Lloyd. How do we grieve for someone? How does it change and evolve as we get older? My dad died when I was 15, and it took me many, many years to be able to express what I had gone through. So I decided to create Griefcast, a chance to talk, share and laugh about the weirdness of grief and death. But with comedians, so it's not that depressing, I promise. Each time I talk to a different comedian about their own personal experience of grief as we remember someone that they have lost along the way. Whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club, this is a chance to talk about the peculiar human process of death. Welcome to Griefcast.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Thank you for listening. Please do rate and review and subscribe if you enjoy the show, or just tell people via traditional methods like WhatsApp. But genuinely, thank you if you have already said nice things about the show. It is really, really appreciated. This week, I'm talking to writer and podcaster Jen Offord. Jen is one of the Standard Issue podcast team, which is a very smart and funny show made by women for women, and well worth a listen if you haven't already. Jen came in to talk to me about her brother, Stephen. And just so you're all prepared, today's episode is about suicide. I'll be giving details of the Samaritans at the end, so please do listen for those if you feel like you need some help. Welcome to Griefcast. Today I'm joined by journalist Jen Offord, who is the co-presenter, producer, host and lady of Standard Issue magazine podcast. Indeed. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think you've nailed it there.
And also, I should quickly add one of my old friends who I went to university with, which is why we're already laughing.
Yeah.
Because it's just been crazy. Been crazy, guys. But that's so you used to write for Standard Issue magazine when it was online.
I did, yeah.
And now it's a podcast, a very brilliant podcast. And it's sort of, Sarah Millican is behind it.
She's the founder.
And now you host that as well as sort of producing it and creating it. And
yeah, it's a bit weird really. Because I used to be a civil servant a few years ago.
It's a big change for Jen.
Yeah. It's all right though. It's a bit ridiculous, isn't it? It's a bit of a ridiculous job really, but I'm very lucky to have it.
I definitely think if I'd spoken to you 7 years ago and said, Jen, guess what you're going to be doing? You would have been like, no way, mate. I don't think you would believe me.
No, mate. I'll be doing a bit of policy on water bills, probably.
Are you allowed to talk about your civil servant days?
I have signed the Official Secrets Act. So
have you?
Yeah, you have to.
Oh, God.
You have to. Someone told me. This is not in any way relevant at all. But someone who I work with in one of my freelance jobs at Eurosport told me that he has a mate who's like known for being like a bit loose with the old truth. Started talking to him about something on a train and he was a bit like, oh, I don't know if this is a real thing. And he like whipped out a copy of the Official Secrets Act and said, you're going to have to sign this and we continue talking. I think the implication was that he was a spy.
Made his friend sign it.
I was a bit like, that's not how it works. Yeah. You've got to, like, he should have.
If he signed it.
Yeah, if he's a fucking spy,
he's already broken it.
Know who's supposed to sign the Official Secrets Act. He's really fucked that up.
Why did he have some spare copies on him?
I don't know. It's part of an elaborate
lie,
I think. Unless he is actually a spook, and now my friend at Eurosport will be killed, probably.
What I'm a bit worried about you now, Jess.
I don't know his name, though, so I think, am I safe? I don't know.
Well, we better ask him.
Yeah.
Get him to get his little Filofax out and say if you're safe or not. Check.
Better find out. Sorry, that was completely irrelevant.
I like if you'd looked at his version of the Official Secrets Act and it's actually like a tenancy agreement. It's like, he'd just written Official Secrets.
No smoking. We used to live together, I for a couple of years at university, and I lived in a very, very small room that was clearly just like... There was just like a tiny...
Oh God, you lived
clearly
in the cupboard.
Used to be part of the room that Carrie had lived in. So basically, we sort of almost shared a room with a plasterboard division.
We used to say goodnight through the wall.
And my bed was an actual camp bed. Quite a robust one, but an actual camp bed nonetheless.
So yeah, it was one room that they'd, because it was a student house, they'd obviously tried to make more money and they'd just put like very thin plasterboard up.
Yeah.
And at one point our beds were next, so mine was up against this plasterboard wall and yours was.
Yeah,
and
we used to move it.
But we used to say night through the wall. But then you did swap with Rachel eventually.
No, she swapped with... I had the brilliant room.
Oh no, she took the brilliant room from me.
And then, because we were like, we'll draw straws. And I ended up with the best room.
Yeah, but then we
I was very unlucky in the draw after that. And I ended up in the shit room. And then everyone was like, you can swap after a turn. I was like, I can't be fucked.
You're very kind.
I can't be bothered to move all my stuff again.
The wardrobe was at the foot of the bed and it was just like a cupboard. Do you remember? You couldn't move. The door opened like onto the bed.
Yeah, I've forgotten about that.
You did have half a window, though, I think.
Yeah,
I did. So I don't know what you're complaining
about. There was a bit of window going on.
So I've known Jen for a long time, which a scary amount of time that we lived together.
Mm.
So I remember Jen when she was going through the experience that we're going to talk about. But obviously, we want to talk about how you are now as well. Mm-hmm. So anyway, before we begin, who are we remembering today?
We are remembering my eldest brother, Stephen.
Stephen. How many brothers do you have?
I have two brothers. I have... Stephen was the eldest, and then I have a middle brother, Michael, and then I am the baby.
What did you used to say? Weren't you the surprise?
I was a miracle.
Oh, yeah.
I was a miracle.
Wasn't your mum on the pill?
She was on the pill. And here I am. Sorry, Mum. She was happy though.
Yeah.
Because she had two boys. She was a bit like, really hope she's a girl. Did you know if you have two children of the same sex, you have a 75% chance of having another one the same sex? Yeah. So I am basically defying all the odds.
And aren't we glad that you are, Jen? So how much older is Stephen to you?
He is 3.5 years older than me.
Okay.
And then Michael's 18 months older than me.
Oh, right. Wow.
Yeah, Kath had a time of it.
So how did Stephen die?
Stephen, you're not allowed to say committed suicide anymore.
It's really?
You're not supposed to say it because it sort of harks back to a bygone era where... Right. I think it's probably, I don't know if it's decriminalised now, actually.
Oh, of course, because the word committed sounds like committed a crime. I've never thought of
that. Yes, and they don't say that anymore. Okay. I lost my brother to suicide, I suppose.
Yeah? Well, how do you feel about it? What would you rather say?
Well, I don't know. There's like varying degrees of... It all feels very melodramatic, doesn't it? I mean, it is quite dramatic.
It is, too.
It was quite dramatic. Yeah. People say took his own life, but I feel weird about that. I think that's like a weird way of putting it. I don't know why.
It's a difficult one to describe, I guess, because it is, like you said, it is such a traumatic thing to go through. Mm-hmm. So how old were you when Stephen
I was 21.
So we'd just left uni, hadn't we? Or were we at uni?
It was like about 3 days after my finals finished, so I was still on campus.
Yeah.
I had been working at the Hot House the night that it happened.
So I'm laughing because the Hot House is the university club.
Yeah.
When I say club, I mean a room at the back of a bar, which probably should have been used to store chairs, but instead
I think it was sometimes. I don't know.
It was just literally a room, but it was a great little room.
Oh, we had a lovely time there. Yeah. They had two rooms. Come on, don't do it down.
Sorry.
The main room. And then another room of a similar size, but different music would be played in them.
I can't remember.
I think I might be over-egging it now.
Yeah, I think you're over-egging it.
So I was working at the Hot House on the night in question, and I had this, obviously, like a bit of a stressful time. You're finishing your degree, whatever, had exams and stuff. It didn't go that well for me, but then I didn't do any work for 3 years. So that is the way the cookie very much crumbles.
Yeah.
Or 2-2. It's not that bad.
It's not bad, Jen.
It's just a few, like 2% off a 2-1.
And you had a good time.
I did not do a lot of work, I think it's fair to say. But yes, it's quite stressful. And I worked in the student union bar and this Hot House club, in inverted commas. And I had loads of mates who worked at the bar, and we were just on the lash, like, constantly. I was smoking, like, 20 Marlboro Lights a day. How did I afford that?
I don't know. They were cheaper.
Yeah, but they were still expensive. Really,
I went to Rollies way before you. I couldn't afford them.
I might have been on Rollies by then, to be fair.
Yeah. We had to teach ourselves because we were so poor. We got to work out how to do this.
I actually ended up preferring Rollies, but anyway.
So you're working at the Hot House.
Yeah, working at the Hot House. So I had this thing on the night that it happened. I had this weird, like, thing in my arm, like a sort of fuzzy pins and needlesy kind of thing in my left arm, which I think, I can't remember, I feel like that might be a symptom of like a heart attack or a stroke or something like that, right? So I was very like concerned about it. I was a bit like, I don't feel like this is a weird thing. I'd never had it before.
Yeah.
I didn't like think, oh, I suspect my brother is dying.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I was just like, this is really weird. I don't know what this is. Anyway, then it later transpired, obviously the next morning, that in fact he had died that night. And then I spent like years afterwards, every time I got... I think it's related to anxiety, so it would like happen... Now, obviously, I don't have, like, a weird psychic link to tragedy.
Psychic arm.
Yeah. Oh, what's happening in the world right now? Obviously, that's not a real thing. But it's sort of like, I think because of the associations I had with it, I would get, like, then I started getting it when I was a bit anxious about something. Yeah. So if something like stressful happened, I'd be like, oh, my arm's gone weird, what's going on? And I'd get really anxious. And there was a time where I'd start like texting my family and be like, is everything okay? Stuff like that. It's
the arm's twitching, guys. So
yeah,
I think anything that is connected to that moment becomes magnified. So it becomes like, oh, well, I was doing that. So is that? Because something so horrible has happened, you try and put logic on it because you're just like, what happened? So he killed himself that night.
Yes.
But you didn't find out to the morning. So you just were working your shift, went home.
Yeah. So it was about, I don't know what time it happened or anything like that. Obviously, he was found by someone on the campus. I don't know who. I don't know if it was like students or what.
He was at uni.
He
as well.
Was at Essex University. Yeah. He'd just finished his first year. Cause so he had, I mean, well, I don't know if we'll go back to this or what, but he basically had like a bit of a tough time of it when he was a teenager and for quite a few years. I don't know if he was having a tough time because he was depressed or if he was depressed because he was having a tough time. Yeah. But like things were not great in his life for a period of time. But the thing about it was that it came completely out of the blue because he'd actually like, he did really badly in his GCSEs. So he didn't do A-levels, but he was doing some art thing and it all got a bit like, he was a very, very like talented artist. He was doing something or other, but it just didn't ever seem to quite work out for him. Like he couldn't quite find what he wanted to do. And it's kind of like crazy when you think about it now. He's 16, of course he can, you know, find what he wanted to do. But yeah, it didn't, things were not going great for him. And he had some mates who were a bit dodgy, I think, and he decided in the end to sort of like disentangle himself, I guess, or disassociate himself from some of them, which basically meant that he just stayed at home all the time, basically. And I think that must have been quite a depressing existence as well. So he, all of that was going on, but then the thing was, he'd actually gone and done like a foundation course or an access course or whatever you call them, and it sort of like he'd completely turned it around. It appeared like he'd gone
so
and
he'd
done,
done
that
this course and then got himself onto uni.
Yeah,
and yeah, so I guess did you feel as a sister? Oh right, okay, yeah, like he's kind of had a bit of a change of heart and these things seem to be a lot better.
Yeah, totally. I thought everything was like completely hunky dory. Afterwards, my parents said some things and I was a bit like, didn't you think that was a bit odd? Like he'd said not that long before he's going to jack in his course or whatever.
Right.
He was quite like disillusioned. Do you remember, like this is 2004.
Right.
And like the world was a bit of a weird place at the time.
Well, it was weird then. And compared to now, obviously, now it's even more mental. But at the time, I do remember thinking, like, God, it really feels like the world's falling apart.
Yeah.
We had no idea what was to come, obviously.
Yeah. Weird, isn't it? But no, it was during the tenure of the second shittest US president. Isn't it weird when you look at the world, like when you watch the inauguration of Donald Trump and you see George W. Bush and you're like, was he that bad?
I know. I remember literally people being like, oh, he's an idiot. I can't believe they voted for him. And then you're like, yeah, I mean, he's actually quite reasonable when you listen to him compared to Trump.
He makes lovely pictures of Putin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he's criticised Trump over some things. And you go, Jesus. So, anyway.
Yeah, sorry. That's right. So David Cameron, don't you miss him a bit
I
now?
Actually said that to Ben the other day.
It's
I was
weird.
Like, I heard Theresa May and I thought, I actually miss Cameron because at least he could do an interview. At least he could, like, say a speech.
At least he could be a prick successfully.
Yeah, he's like a good politician.
Yeah.
Yeah, awful.
Sorry.
Sorry. So, From like you said, from your sister point of view, from sister role, you kind of seemed like things had got a lot better.
Yeah, I was pretty, I don't know if complacent is the word, but I was pretty much like, I thought everything was fine, really.
Well, when you're younger sister, do you think it's quite hard, isn't it? I know, I'm a younger sister, and I sort of feel like you often don't get told stuff. Because everyone's sort of like, you're the baby, kind of like.
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely stuff about him as a teenager that I did not know that I later found out, like, some of the stuff he'd gotten up to at school and whatever. I think he was quite naughty,
right.
Which I didn't really know.
Yeah. Did you think you were shielded a little bit from what was going on with him?
Yeah, and I think my mum, certainly when he was a teenager, was really concerned about him. But I think it was, I don't really think anyone knew what to do.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, like mental health issues now, it's almost like fashionable to talk about mental health issues now.
Yeah.
It's kind of, it's like climate change, you know. It'll go away again, like climate change. People stop caring. You know, there was that brief time where Coldplay really cared about trees and stuff.
I definitely remember watching Blue Peter when I was younger and, like, recycling being, like, the thing you talked about and everyone really talked about recycling.
Yeah.
And now, well, I guess there's better schemes.
Well, I think, yeah, I think mental health is going to be a bit like that.
So do you think he had mental health problems and...
Yes.
In a way, it just wasn't... It was, I guess, because I know what you mean. Obviously, we're, like, nearly the same age. I don't remember growing up with people talking about mental health in that way. Mm. People say, oh, they're a bit down or, you know, like they're a bit blue. There wasn't sort of like, oh, they... Like, whereas now my cousin's much younger and she'll be like, oh, my friend has OCD and anxiety. And I was like, we never would have said that about anybody because I just felt like you didn't know, did you?
No, it was kind of like if someone... I sort of remember people having OCD. I remember people being like, yeah, because I've got OCD around that time. But I don't really remember anyone talking a lot about depression. I'd been a bit depressed in like my second year at uni.
Yeah.
So I sort of knew a little bit about it. But yeah, and I don't, but when we were teenagers,
yeah,
I don't remember anyone chatting about that kind of thing. I think my grandpa had depression as well. So it's obviously something that sort of like runs in the family a bit. Yeah. But I don't know, like, doesn't everyone have depression at some point? Like,
at some point, I think most people experience at least feeling a bit crap.
Yeah.
So he definitely, now you look back, you think, oh, okay, maybe there was. But at the time, so you wake up that next morning and you, what happens? Your mum rings you? Or?
So it was really, because I'd been working and then we had a drink afterwards. So I didn't go home until like 4 a.m. or something. And then I was getting calls like really early in the morning and I wasn't picking them up. And I was like, oh, you know, whatever. And then I got a call on my like landline in my room, and I answered it, and it was like a porter or something like that. So they'd obviously like called the university, and been like, "We really need to get hold of her."
Yeah.
So it was a porter, and he was like, "I've got Mr. Peter Davis on the phone, who's like a family friend, basically. You need to call home or something like that." And I was a bit like, "Oh, if Pete's calling, like something's like someone's dead, basically." Yeah. So then I called my mum, or she called me, or something. I can't remember. And I spoke to her, and she said, like, you know, Stephen's killed himself. And I was just like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
You know, and I had to go outside in my pyjamas and dressing gown to have this call because I didn't have, like, good enough reception or something.
Oh, God, the reception was always so bad.
Yeah, so I was, like, standing outside the back of Lewis Court.
Oh, my God.
On the phone with my mum being like, your brother's...
Lewis Court is the...
Yeah, sorry.
...accommodation on campus that Gemma's living at the time. Whoa.
And I was just like... Yeah, like in my pyjamas and my very fetching pink dressing gown, which you'll remember.
I very vividly remember this pink dressing
Still
gown.
Still got it.
Oh, God.
Still got it. It's disgusting. And, yeah, and she's just like, your brother's killed himself. It's just like, all right. She's like, you've got to come home. It's like, okay. But because I was such a useless article when I was at university, I had, like, no money.
Yeah.
I literally had no money in my bank account. I'd maxed my overdraft. Oh, I'd maxed my credit cards. I was obviously, like, waiting to get paid or something. Yeah. I had no money. And I was a bit like, oh, I actually don't know how I'm going to get home, kind of thing.
Oh, my God.
So then, my mum doesn't drive. My dad is the only one who drives.
Right.
And Michael, my middle brother, was also at university in Kent at the time, at Kent University in Canterbury. And they couldn't get hold of him either because he'd been, like, out on the lash or whatever. God. I think it'd been, like, their summer ball or something like that. And they couldn't get hold of him either. So they literally had to drive there and be like,
oh, my God,
you got to come home, kind of thing. And my dad went with someone else, but I can't remember.
But, so your mum didn't go and get Michael?
No, she didn't. She stayed at home. I can't remember why. But so first of all, I was a bit like, fuck, I've got to get home. I don't know how I'm going to... I don't have any money. How am I going to do this? So then I phoned our friend Alex.
Oh, yeah. Our
Fuzzy.
Mutual friend.
So I phoned lovely Fuzzy and I was just like, Alex, my brother's killed himself I have to go home and I don't have any money. Do you think you could lend me 30 quid so I can get the chain? And he was obviously just like,
Yeah, of course
I can do that kind of thing. And then I got another call from my mum saying that my best friend from home, Vera, she said, Vera's mum, Sarah, who's like a very good friend of my mum, is going to come and get you.
Oh, okay.
Obviously, like, it's going to take her a bit of time.
Yeah.
So she's going to be a few hours, but she's going to come and get you. So just stay put. So I phoned Alex back. I was like, I don't need 30 quid anymore, but do you think you could like come and sit with me for a bit?
Oh my God.
Kind of thing. So Alex came over with someone else, with one of his housemates, Lucy. We were like good friends. So he came over. And that he'd obviously, like, someone had let someone else know, and then someone had let someone else know, and whatever. And by the time Vera's mum turned up, there were about 10 people sitting in my lounge, and everyone came, and they brought, like, biscuits, like, jammy Dodgers.
Right.
Or, like, I think my mate Catherine bought me a bottle of lemon Fanta.
Student treat. That is student's equivalent, like,
it's
bottle of wine.
One of my favourites. Yeah. I think she bought me a bottle of lemon Fanta and some jammy Dodgers. And everyone who turned up bought 20 Marlboro Lights with them. It's fucking great. I had like 100 fags or something by the end of it.
Which you definitely need when you're in one of those moments and you smoke. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I smoked a lot over the next couple of weeks. But so it was really, like, it was really surreal. I was just sitting in this room with, like, 10 people.
I remember you rang me.
Yeah, and I called you because there were all these people there, and they're, like, you know, some of my best friends were there. It was very nice of them and to come over and, like, look after me until Vera and her mum turned up. But, yeah, I called you because I remember talking to you about this podcast, right? And you said you sort of become like the go-to person for grief. I was a bit like, I don't really know what to do. So I phoned you, but you weren't that you had gone home.
Back to London. Yeah.
And yeah, you weren't, you didn't, it was quite early in the morning. Anyway, you didn't pick up. So I think I left you a voicemail message and I was a bit like, my brother's died. Don't really know what to do.
Yeah.
And then obviously I did then hear from you, it's all right, she did get back to me, it's fine.
Grief girl, pop when she's busy.
Yeah.
I was at a friend's house in Brixton for some reason. I remember I really didn't want to be there. I wanted to go home and I think there'd been a party. And I remember seeing this voicemail and being like, oh, you know, you find a moment to...
Mm.
And then just being like... And I still remember a really shitty phone, like a really shit, like Nokia blue thing.
Mm.
And sitting on the stairs and talking to you. And just crying, and you crying, and just being, because obviously, yes, I've lots of people talk to me about death, but the majority of people talk to me about their parents dying of cancer or something else. And I remember at the time being like, this is...
Next level.
Yeah, like, I don't quite know what to say.
I'm laughing about that, like, hey, yeah. And also, that's a bit like, you know, it's all relative, isn't
it? Yeah, but I do remember being very like, and then just feeling so crap that I was... You know, in London and far away, and couldn't bring the jammy Dodgers around.
It's so shocking, isn't it?
It was so shocking.
It's so shocking because I didn't know anyone. I remember. So not that long afterwards, obviously we had like our graduation.
Yeah.
And me, you, and Amy, who's another friend who we also lived with for those 2 years. Me, you, and Amy graduated on the same day, like in the same thing.
Yeah.
And I obviously hadn't seen you guys for a bit. Knew what happened. And I remember like everyone's parents being like. Sort of looking at me I think like people maybe were a bit like, I don't know if she's gonna come or not, kind of thing. But I went home for like 2 weeks and then I came back to Brighton because I was like, well, I'm not moving home, so you know, I want to be in Brighton, that's where all my friends are.
Yeah.
And in the end, like, I ended up going home at the end of the summer and staying there for a year. But yeah, so I went to graduation. I remember you saying to me at the graduation, like, my mum knew someone who killed themselves. And I guess it was sort of a bit like, you know, you're not, you know, these
these things happen. These
things happen, like, you know, yeah.
Is that
like,
my attempt to talk to you? I'm really sorry.
No, not at all, not at all. No, you were very good. You sent me, like, a care parcel.
I did send you a care parcel.
Notebook and, like, a CD and maybe some, I can't remember, maybe
I
some
can tell you, I thought, what does Jen need? And it was Heat magazine, packet fags, notebook, bit of chocolate. And
yeah.
I was like, and I recommend that to, when someone else got in touch with me recently and said, our friends had just lost a parent and they said, oh, what should I do? And I was like, send a package. Send chocolate and a book and a mag, like trash. Just things that they can do to go, oh, when I feel crap, I can just...
Yeah.
And I remember hesitating on the cigarettes, thinking, I probably shouldn't send a pack of 10 B&H. But I thought, that's Jen, she'll want them. She'll want a pack of 10
B&H. I definitely appreciate them. Yeah. No, it was very nice. But I remember you saying this thing. But I think it's kind of interesting because at the time... I didn't know anyone who'd killed themselves, at all. It was a really, like, alien...
Yeah.
You know, that's a kind of, you're like, this is the sort of thing that happens on Hollyoaks. This isn't, like, a real thing. This is ridiculous.
We watched a lot of Hollyoaks.
Yeah.
My mum's friend killed herself. And I think when I told my mum what had happened to you, my mum then started talking a lot more about her friend. And I'd sort of know, like, when you're a kid, like, oh, yeah, Anne died. Da, 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 like, yeah. And then she sort of went into it, and I was like... Again, as you do, you get older and you find out much more stuff. And I was like, whoa. But yeah, I agree with you. It did, especially in our group of friends, it did feel very dramatic and traumatic. And it was, and like you said, we just finished uni. Everyone was just very like on a high. We were happy. Mm. It seemed like, yeah, you know, we're all going on to the next adventure. Mm. And it did, I remember really feeling for you because it felt like what should be a really exciting time just got like ripped away from you.
Oh, it was awful. It was awful because it is. I have sought counselling later on, not at the time, not for a long time actually, but my counsellor was sort of saying, like, you know, that's sort of the time when you kind of launch yourself in the world and you're supposed to be doing this, like, kind of like, here I am, this is me, this is what
I'm ready
now.
I've done my degree, I'm ready.
And it was just like, I never wanted to go back to Harwich. Like, it's like a very small town, a small coastal town in Essex, which, you know, I appreciate a lot more these days. Like, you know,
doesn't Clive Owen live quite
nearby? He does live very nearby, Clive Owen, local lad Clive. So Heidi High was also filmed there, just to give you a little...
Okay, so that's give you a flavour of what Harris is like. Yeah,
yeah. No, but I never wanted to go back there. I didn't want to go back there at all. And I ended up having to go back there, basically, because I was a bit like, I'm in Brighton. I don't have a job, like a proper job. I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I'm dicking around pretending I'm still at university and I'm not. And I really just need to be, like, with my family at the moment.
Yeah.
So I ended up going back there. There's no jobs. So I was working, like, in the admin department of my local Morrison's. But actually, weirdly, the richest I've ever been because I lived at home and I didn't have to pay for anything. And it was nice and it was the right thing to do. And I worked with really, really nice people. And you kind of, like, in those sort of circumstances, you kind of worry, like, oh, what's it going to be like? Everyone's going to be talking about us.
Yeah.
It's, you know, we're going to be, like, local gossip or whatever, but actually, like, you kind of, it is a community in a way that I've never, I mean, it's different because you're from London, you know, you still have like a family home, right? And and you know the neighbours and shit like that, I guess, or people who live on the street and stuff, but I've never really had that in London because I've always lived in flats. No one talks to their neighbours. It was, you know, it is a community and they look after you, like, so they did look after us and it was the right thing to do at the time and it was right for me to, like, you know, be with my family and stuff. And then, you know, a year later I was like, right, I'm moving to London.
Oh yeah, I think it would have been very strange for you in a way to do anything else. Like, it felt, because I mean, I went back home. I mean, my home was in London, so that was, you know, like a convenient home. But yeah, I think you would have felt so lost if you'd stayed in Brighton.
Yeah. People will ask you, like...
Yeah, how do you feel when when people ask you about it?
It's really weird. People, like... It's a very difficult conversation. And I wrote an article about this for Standard Issue last year.
Yes.
And it's not something that I have felt very comfortable talking to people about, to be honest. Like, even to, like, really close friends. It's not something I've felt. I've spoken to you about it a bit over the years, but that's because you're go-to grief girl.
Happy to talk about it, guys.
Yeah, but it's, like, it's not something I've felt that comfortable talking about. So I wrote this thing, and it was quite a big deal for me at the time. And in it, I wrote about, how many brothers and sisters do you have? It's such entry-level chat, right? Yeah. So the only people asking you that are going to be people you don't know that well. Yeah. And you're a bit like, oh, do I really want to have this conversation today? Because you feel a bit like you might be judged, which is a stupid way to feel. Like, it's not rational. But it's...
No, but I can understand, because it's just like, you. It's a very personal piece of information that you wouldn't normally reveal, but...
Yeah.
It's the same with parents. So people go, oh, where do your mum and dad live? And I have to think, is it worth me saying my mum lives in London?
Yeah.
And then they all, which we've talked about, they think they're divorced, which annoys me. Because I think, well, they're not divorced. He's dead. But, like, I can see them being like, or they think, especially with a dad, they think, oh, your dad's not around. And you're like, no, he's not.
He's not, but for very different reasons.
So it must be the same with brothers and sisters. It's tricky. Really,
so it's a bit like, do I make... You know, am I invested in you enough to, like, have this conversation with you? It's kind of like, it's sort of twofold. Like, it's actually, well, so you kind of feel a bit like you might be judged. You feel a bit like people are going to think, why did he do that? You know, maybe you're all a bit shit. maybe you're a bit of a shit family. And then also you're a bit like, they might think I'm mental. I don't think I should really say mental. But
I know what you mean. Because I don't have that. They wouldn't go, oh, maybe she's got cancer. That I'd have to worry about that side of it.
Yeah. And sometimes I am a bit mental. So it's a bit like, I don't really want to play that card too early. It's going to come out in the wash, mate. But also the other thing is, I really don't like people to think that I am damaged.
So you don't want to be defined by it.
Yeah, and that was a really, really big thing for me, like, all the time. It's like, you feel really overshadowed by it. Like, there was a long time where I was a bit like, when I actually think this and say it out loud, I feel like a bit of a psychopath. objectively, I'm a bit like, my life hasn't been ruined by this, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because, like, I was very young when it happened and I had loads of other stuff to go and do. Obviously, like, it's shit.
Yeah,
it's awful. It has been a horrible, horrible thing to deal with.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And continue to deal with. But, you know, I was a bit like, my life hasn't been ruined by this. I've got enough time to, you know, turn this around. That's weird. But I was a bit like, but I feel like maybe my parents' lives have been.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a fair assessment or not, but...
Well, it's hard for you. Obviously, you can't speak for them, but God, as everybody says, losing a child.
Yeah, and also
losing
I'm not
a
parent.
Yeah, and to suicide, I can't begin to...
I can't begin to unpick, you know, I know how I feel about it and it's not great, so I can't even begin to imagine how they feel about it. But I was just always like, I don't want... Yeah, there was a long period of time I was a bit like, nothing I do... is ever going to make it okay for them.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm never going to be good enough to, like, not be in the shadow of that. Like, they're never going to be... I can never really make them happy.
Well, I think that's harsh. I think... only because I'm your friend, I'm the same as you, but I think it's not something they're ever going to get over.
Mm.
They're ever going to learn to live with it.
Yeah.
But you can still make them happy because of you, but you can't. He'll never be there again, and that fundamentally changes everything.
Yeah.
So it's I think it's.
I think, like, now I'm a bit like, I don't really feel like that anymore.
Yeah.
But at the time, I felt very much like in the shadow of it, which feels like a bit of a bratty thing to think.
I can understand, because it must have dominated. Your whole lives, their life, and so it's hard to, like you said, you're young, you want to move forward. It's hard to do that.
And I think at the time, the concern, my parents were understandably everyone's sort of primary concern, because they're like, fucking hell, what do we do with this is new. And so I think everyone was really like, you know, around them, And I felt a bit like Michael and I, not like we were neglected, but like we were a bit of an afterthought. And I didn't really feel like that at the time because my parents were my primary concern as well. Yeah. I was like, this is worse for them, so you have to sort them out, kind of thing. But afterwards, I was a bit like, it was really shit for Michael and I. And then Michael had like the added layer of ridiculousness in that he's a guy.
Yeah.
And I always felt like all of my friends were brilliant. There was no one who was like, don't know what to say to you. This is weird. No one was like that at all. Some of the dudes were like, didn't necessarily know what to say.
Yeah.
Like I have a very close friend. I don't think he really knew. He'd never experienced like
anything like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this was like, you know, next level because it's someone our kind of age as well, and mental health and whatever. So he didn't really know what to say to me, but he like sent me a text one day when I was at home saying like, I've just been into Sports Direct or something like that, or JD Sports, to see if they make, to see if they sell teddy bears wearing Charlton Athletic strips.
Jenna Charlton fan.
Yeah. But they don't. Sorry.
That was his attempt. That's very sweet.
Yeah.
That's very sweet.
It was very sweet. It was obviously like, I don't know what to say to you, but I like, I want you to know that I love you and I'm thinking about you.
Would you like a teddy bear that supports Charlton Athletic?
Well, my mum then, at the time, made Marathon, who is my childhood teddy bear, made her a Charlton Athletic baby grow. Onesie, I think, is what we would call it now. Yeah. She made her a Charlton Athletic onesie. Well, she's got a really, really ropey Charlton badge on it. Like, it's pretty shit, but she still wears it.
Yeah, for what counts.
Yeah. Cheers, Mum.
But did Michael's friends...
I think because I was a woman, obviously, I had, like... I have a very good support network, I still do, and my friends are great and, you know, all of that, gubbins. and everyone was really good. Like all of the women in my life were really on it and really like, are you okay, blah, blah, blah. And it went on for like a long time. Michael still has the same friends and they're brilliant friends and they're good to him and whatever, but I don't know how well equipped they were to deal with this.
Yeah, and how well culturally it is
absolutely
for him to be able to talk
and
about it.
And that's actually like one of the first things that made me like think about gender inequality.
Yeah.
I was a bit like... We got it shit in a lot of ways, but like, we've got it okay in other ways.
Yeah,
like,
definitely. Especially when it comes to grief and expressing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely, there were different expectations for my brother and me and how we expressed it. And
absolutely.
It affected us, definitely. And it would have been lovely if it could just been like, it doesn't matter that, are you upset? That should be the first question.
Your brother would have been, you know, like a young man at the time.
Yeah, he was 19. So at the time, everyone was very much, well, he's the man of the house now.
Yeah.
And because he's 4 years older than me, I thought, oh, okay, he's the man of the house. But now I think, he's 19. What the fuck are you saying that? 19-year-old boy. Yeah. And he had so much pressure lumped on him. And he just, not from me and my mum, but from...
Well, society,
Society and our friends and, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, because I think Michael was like, well, I'm the oldest now.
Yeah, God, that must be really strange. Like the dynamic shifting.
Yeah, like, oh, I've got to like, you know, man up or whatever it was. And he was only 23.
God.
Like, you know, we were
so young
to be having this experience.
Have you and Michael got much closer because of it?
We've always been really close. Yeah. Like, Michael and I have always been really close. There's only 18 months between us. I was kind of, and we used to like hang around in the same like circle of friends as well. His friends sort of adopted me. And that would have been, for a lot of teenage boys, that would be like, fuck off. I really don't want you here. You know, he did resist a little bit at first, but he was all right in the end. And we've always been really close. Like, we've always got on pretty well. We are, like, we had a period of time where things were not great afterwards. And I think, like, I think I was a bit of a bell end, to be honest. I was a bit like... I don't know. Maybe I projected a bit of my guilt about having left London onto him.
Mm.
He was struggling a bit. He was not having a great time of it, as you would expect. And we didn't get on for a bit. He was not that nice to me for a period of time. But I think I was also a bit of a bell end. And I was quite like, maybe I was a bit sanctimonious about it all, or a bit like, I've totally got this sussed. Like, you know, I'm dealing with this pretty well, actually. And
but it's so hard. You're both just dealing with this, like, how the fuck does anyone do it? Like,
yeah.
you know.
You just get on, basically. Yeah. You get on and then 5 years later you have a breakdown.
There's one way of doing it,
Jen.
Just go,
I'm just going to get on with this and then in a few years' time I'll wake up crying one morning and be like, I can't go to work today.
I hope this is a fair thing to say, but like, I wonder with suicide as well. Like, obviously, so my dad, as I always say, was diagnosed in February, dead by April. So we had the shock.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I didn't think I knew that. That's quick.
Really quick.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that's the same, because I think me and you have a similar experience in that we just got on with it for a long time because we're in shock. And I think you can do a lot of stuff in shock. You can carry on. You can go out. You can talk to people. You can have relationships. Yeah. You have a job. And then I wonder, like, I don't know if you have a slower experience or they're older, or I think when some people are younger, obviously my dad was not as young as your brother, but he was 44.
Yeah.
And it happens very quickly. There's a part of you that's just like, your brain just goes, no, didn't happen. No, not ready to take that in. So you sort of, there's part of me that definitely knew, obviously knew he was dead, but another part of me that was like, but everything really looks the same. Like, roughly it looks the same, you know, there's one big chunk missing, but like the house is the same, the town is the same, the world, you know. So you sort of can go, I can probably carry on and kind of pretend it's not happening.
I don't know, because everything changed. You know, they say like you shouldn't, you know, the three most stressful things or whatever. So I had to move home. I was unemployed.
You didn't have a baby in the process.
No, I didn't. And I wasn't getting divorced either. But I was unemployed, so I was looking for a job. I had to move. I had to move. And my brother had died. Yeah. So it's just like all of this was going on at the same time. Yeah, and there were, I suppose, like the mundanity of it all as well. Like,
that's
you know,
what I mean. Like,
everything's
changed.
My dad saying, like, do you think you need to sign on now kind of thing? And I'm like, no, you can pay for me.
Everything changes and also nothing changes.
Yeah.
And so you're left with the slight, I do think that contributes to the shock.
Yeah.
Because, and also because you move back home, like you said, so it's not a house you know well, around your friends from that you've known all your life. So
it's just weird things, isn't it? It's like the first Christmas.
Oh yeah, how
and
was
stuff
that?
Like that. Just weird things, like we moved the table in the kitchen so that there wouldn't be
what, like empty chair.
Yeah.
Did that make it weirder that you'd moved it?
No, it didn't. I think I suggested it. I was a bit like, should we put the table against the wall, because then like, it won't be. There won't be like an empty seat at the table.
God,
which is just bleak, isn't it?
It's
such
so
a bleak
image.
Like four people in party hats with like a vacant chair.
So when did he die in, what was that, July? When did
May.
We come to, May.
End
it was
of
May,
May,
of course.
May bank holiday weekend. Cheers, Stephen. Ruined that for me.
So then you had, then you had your birthdays and Christmas and stuff. How do you deal with anniversaries? We talk about anniversaries a lot.
I don't do anything. I don't like it as a thing. It pisses me off. It doesn't change anything. It doesn't make anything better or worse. It just, like, it was weird actually, because before I had someone close to me go and die, people say, like, oh, I think about them every day. And I was a bit like, you can't think about them every day. It's ridiculous. Like, you know, there's so many other things to think about of a day. And then you actually do. Like, you genuinely do. And I don't think about him every day anymore because, you know, quite a long period of time has passed. I obviously still think about him a lot, but I don't think about him every day. And there, and I did this thing a couple of years ago. I cycled across America like a lunatic. And I actually forgot it was the anniversary.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
When I was doing it. I actually forgot because I didn't really have any concept of, like, time.
You were cycling a bike called Beyonce across America.
Yeah, through the deep south. And I just, like, I was too busy fearing for my life to think about that kind of bullshit. So I actually forgot that it was happening. And then when I realised, like, a couple of days later, oh, right, oh, that happened. You didn't even think about it. I felt really pleased about that, which probably sounds weird.
No, I think everyone deals with it very differently. And I think also maybe dealing with a suicide is a different, because the anniversary is a very strange, you know, our anniversary is like the day that cancer took over and he was forced to die. That's a very different anniversary to the day your brother took his own life. It's, I can imagine maybe it holds a different thing for you.
I used to be like, you know, send my mum a text or whatever and be like, oh, you know, thinking of you today kind of thing. I don't really do that anymore because I'm a bit like, I sort of don't, it's not like I don't want to indulge my mum in her grief about her dead son, but it's kind of like I don't really want to give the anniversary like any oxygen because to me, it's stupid. It's not, it doesn't change anything. It's not like a thing.
Yeah, my brother doesn't. I have to, I often remind him. I'm often like, it's dad's anniversary, by the way. And he's like, oh, is it? And to me, it's funny because to me, I'm like, how can you not, to me, like the day like screams at the calendar for like for like a month beforehand. It's all I can see. Oh, there it is, there it is, there it is, there it is. And he says the same. He's like, I just genuinely can get by. Like he's gone a week or he'll text me and go, oh, was it last week? And I'm like, yes, how did you not remember?
Well, I don't know how the other members of my family feel about it, actually. I don't know. But I just think it's silly. It doesn't make it better or worse. It's just a day, isn't it? Like he's, you know.
Yeah.
And maybe that's like horribly cold or whatever. But
no, I just think it's how you, how you deal with it.
It's just never had really like any sort of resonance. I don't even know what date it was. I honestly don't. I think it's like the 29th or something like that, but I can't remember. I just remember it was the Sunday of the bank holiday weekend in late May. But it's been 12 years this year. No, 13 years this year. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, that is, it's a long time.
Yeah, it is.
So do you still talk about it with your mum, or is it kind of, have you reached a point where it's all been said?
Not really. I kind of got to a point where... So initially, I was like sort of all about them, really. I was a bit like, got to make sure they're okay. And then after a while, I was a bit like, I sort of need to look after myself a bit. And I was kind of like, I don't really want to talk to you about it.
Yeah.
Because I sort of feel like you should talk to your friends or a counsellor or whatever. Yeah. I sort of feel like it's not appropriate in a way. Yeah. Like, you know, it's sort of, it's weird, isn't it? Because your parents are human beings and you sort of forget that. And you kind of like, you know, if you have someone saying to you, oh, I feel guilty or whatever, it's like, I don't know. Just don't, because I want to think that you're like this oracle that can just make any problem go away.
Yeah.
I don't really want to accept that there are some problems you can't fix and you can't fix for yourself either.
Yeah.
Because, like the dynamic completely changed.
Got it. Yeah,
you know,
of course.
You have to like grow up immediately, and you're looking after your parents, and you're a bit like, after a while, you're kind of like, I didn't ask for this. This is shit. Yeah. No, I want them to look after me. This is bullshit.
Did you ever feel angry at him?
No, I never did, actually. I never felt angry with him. It's sort of weird because, on one hand, you're kind of like, I sort of feel a bit like, I don't think he was of his right mind when this happened. And I kind of feel like when you get to the point where you're like, I don't see any other option for me, like I don't see any other way of making it better, I kind of feel like you must have lost touch with, you know, you cannot be in a good place, mentally speaking. But then at the same time, I sort of accept that he made a choice.
Yeah.
And that was his choice to make.
Yeah.
I'd rather he hadn't.
Yeah, of course.
But I kind of feel a bit like that was what he chose to do. And
do you kind of feel a bit like you have to respect it?
Yeah, I do. I think it's a weird one, isn't it? Because you're sort of like, that was stupid. you silly sausage.
Classic little sister.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
But at the same time, a bit like,
okay.
You know.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's not something I would... I'm not saying, that's how you feel, crack on.
No, but like, I think that's a healthy way to have it in your head, because you can't change it, you can't take it back. So, in a way, I just wondered if you did feel angry. I think it's good if you can get past that and think, well, okay, that was his decision.
I feel really sad about it. I still feel really sad about it. Like, you know, it's, and there are things you're a bit like, I wish... There's like funny little things that you keep hold of, like you remember all of the bad things you ever said to him. It's like, I was his little sister, like we were teenagers, of course we said bad things to each other from time to time. He said some pretty horrible things to me, I'm sure, I just can't remember any of them. But yeah, you think about all of the things you ever said to them that were bad, and you're a bit like, oh, what if they didn't know that I, you know, loved them? What if they didn't know? I'm sure he did, you know, I'm sure he didn't think that. Because I shouted at him once for letting the cat out accidentally. I'm sure, well, she does not love me. She thinks I'm an awful person.
Yeah.
But, and just stuff, I bought him a book. Because he'd had this horrible time, right? And I'd read, you know, like everyone went nuts for it at the time. The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Night,
great
right?
Book. Great
it
book.
Is great, yeah. But I can't, I can't like look at it anymore because basically like so the last sentence of it or something like that is like, spoiler alert if you haven't read it, I think the last sentence is something like, because I'm brave and I went to London and I can do anything or something like that.
Yeah.
So I bought him this book because I read it and I was like, the character sort of reminded me of him a little bit. And then like the whole, you know, I can do anything and I'm brave and I did this. Because I thought it was really brave of him to go back and get his education, you know, at the age of 25 and go to university.
Yeah.
So I was like trying to say to him like, you know, I really respect what you've done, basically. And he never read it. And to me, that's like the most heartbreaking thing.
Yeah. That stuff like that, that just there's, and there's nothing you can do and you can't shout at that person and go, just read my fucking book.
Yeah. It's oh my God. That's like the, that is one of the things that like has stayed with me that upsets me like the most. It's so weird. The little things that you, I feel like we're both going to cry.
Stuff like that is fucking killer, isn't it? Because it's just...
You're like, if you just read it, you know. You just know.
It's so tragic, isn't it? And just like, oh, if I just... When my dad was dying, I don't know if I've said this, you know, we were all sent in to have conversations with him. And I remember I tried to have a chat with him. My mum, or someone said, you must make sure you say things. You know, this is the time. And I think I went in and because I was 15, all I said was, I just want you to know, like, are you really influenced by music?
Sorry.
No, because it's such a funny... And he laughed. He laughed. And I, at the time, was like, oh, well, fuck you. Like, there's me trying to, like, you know, I because all I listen to is his music. Like, I still have all his old vinyl. He was a DJ when he was in his 20s. And he laughed, and I was heartbroken. And now I can see.
This was hilarious.
He was obviously just like, that's it, is it? All right. But, and now I think, it breaks. I think, oh, I wish I'd... said something or, you know, said something more meaningful or, but to me as a 15-year-old, that was the biggest thing I could say of like...
Well, that was meaningful for you.
At the time it was. And especially, you know, as a teenager, you have these things that mean so much to you and you don't understand they might change. They might, you might feel differently.
Yeah.
But I know what you mean. Like those things that you just, you can't take back. You can't, nothing you could do about it.
Yeah.
You can't make him read that book. It's just, but isn't it nice that you gave it to him? You gave it to him.
Yeah, unfortunately, the gesture was completely lost by him not reading it. But
you don't know. How do you know he definitely didn't read it?
I think I asked my mum, did he read it? And she's like, I don't think so.
But maybe she's like, wrong.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe I asked him, have you read it yet? And he's like, oh, whatever. I don't know.
So you have no evidence.
He might have read it, but I don't think he did.
He might have started it.
It's the last line, Karen. That's... The pivotal bit.
Fuck the first 30 pages, mate.
Yeah, just, you know, get to the end. There's a message there. So that's like, I don't know, that was the most, that was the thing that I really kept hold of that sort of like, you know, haunted me.
You must have been pissed off when they put the play on.
I've never seen it. I couldn't.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
It.
Then it's all the fucking posters everywhere.
Yeah, and everyone's like, oh, it's so good. It's such a great play. You really should go. I'm not going to. Sorry, it's really harrowing for me, actually. You're like left with these like weird little things that you feel like absolutely devastated by, even though they're a bit stupid, really. And that's like... And everyone has those. So your experience is completely different and no one else is in your head with you in knowing those things. Mm. And then, like, everyone else's life moves on.
Yeah.
Which is fair enough. Like, it should do. It would be weird if it didn't. But, you know, what is initially like this big, like, you're right, it just sort of goes.
Yeah.
And then eventually people just sort of stop asking you.
Yeah. Well, they just forget. They just forget.
They
do a podcast and bang on about it.
Yeah.
Then they start asking again.
Yeah, you're right, mate. You okay, hon?
It's really lonely. And I think that I talk about this a lot, but that the Julia Samuels book, Grief Works, is really good. And she talks about that because she said, fundamentally, you're feeling something that the rest of the world at that second isn't.
Yeah.
So you're always going to feel isolated and lonely. And that's why that help and support is so important because you need people to remind you, oh, no, you're not alone. I'm just going to work.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean I don't understand. I'm just over here.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so hard. I know you've done a lot of work for the Samaritans since.
I ran a marathon in 2008 or 2009.
Raising money for the Samaritans.
Raising money for the Samaritans.
And you've got much more involved with them. Has that been helpful to kind of try and...
Yeah, I think it's quite cathartic.
Yeah.
It was... They asked me... I wrote this article for Standard Issue last year, which I talked about earlier. They kind of like got in touch with me because I've done a few things. Like, I've done Ride London for them as well, which is like a really long bike ride and a few other bits and bobs. So I've raised a bit of money for them over the years. And I guess because I'm a journalist, I have like a platform to wang on about these things. So, you know, occasionally they're a bit like, do you want to wang on about this for us? I'm like, all right. You sort of want to use your experience for the good.
Yeah.
And it is important to talk about because this is the other thing. Like, you know, back in that, you know, in the Brighton Pavilion when you're like, my mum's mate killed herself.
Yeah.
And I was a bit like, yeah, because no one... But the thing is, when you talk to people, everyone, like, it is really alarming, actually, how many people are affected by suicide.
Yeah, it is not, like, magic fairy dust rare.
It's like, alarmingly common. And, of course, it is, you know, overwhelmingly the biggest killer of men under 50 in the UK. Now, I mean, that's kind of like, obviously, they're not all dying of cancer and heart attacks under the age of 50. It tends to be something that happens a bit. So you would sort of... But you'd kind of think, like, maybe, like, dicking around might be, like, a bigger cause of, like, just doing stupid things.
Yeah.
But, like, it's overwhelmingly... And it's the biggest killer of young people in general as well.
Wow.
So it is like, it is a lot more common than you'd think. And no one talks about it really, because it is really hard. It is a really hard conversation to have. And also, you just don't want to like ruin someone's lunch. You know what I mean? Like, oh, yeah.
I do. I mean, I feel for you because it's bad enough when you've got, you know, dead dad from cancer. That can ruin a lunch. But I feel like I am given a card to talk about it.
Yeah.
So I feel like if someone said you ruined my lunch, I'd be able to go, fuck you. Like, it's cancer. It's not... Somehow it seems
if
like...
If anyone told me that I'd ruined their lunch, I think I'd take umbrage with that.
But you know what I mean? I think you're right. Like, if I say at a party, oh, my dad died of cancer, I don't think people would be like, whoa, buzzkiller. They'd just kind of be like, oh, okay. But I can see, like, suicide is, like you said, it comes with this,
I
like...
I think it's sort of, like, terrifies and fascinates people. They're a bit like... So when you're like, oh, my brother's dead, it's like... Because then it's a bit like, oh my God, I might die.
Yeah.
Because presumably he's about the same age as you, so he's quite young. Fuck, what if I die? How did he die?
Yeah.
It's all right, don't worry, he killed himself. You're safe.
You're safe, you're okay.
Don't worry. But then they're like, oh, do you mind me asking how? You're like, sort of, kind of.
But yeah, it is, like you said, it is a really tricky conversation. I guess the only thing you can combat it is keep talking about it.
I just think people need to be sensitive about it, and I think people are not sensitive about suicide particularly. Like, you know, someone jumps in front of a train and you're late for work and you come in and you're like, oh, some arsehole threw themselves in front of a train. Really?
Yeah.
I just think...
I hate that. I find that really shocking.
Yeah.
And people go, oh, yeah, thanks very much, ruined... bloody tubers. I'm like,
yeah, oh, it took me 3 hours to get home. It's like,
tied.
They were so sad they killed themselves.
Yeah, like
who do you think?
You're late.
Yeah.
You're fucking late.
Who's the loser in this scenario? Oh, seriously. Like, they've got a family and friends, and you'd just be like, and people would come into the office, like when I was a civil servant, and say stuff like that. And I'd just be like, you don't know who you're talking to.
Yeah,
when you say shit like that, A, you sound like a prick. Sorry, but you do. B, you don't know who you're talking to.
Yeah.
And the chances are, as I've sadly discovered, it's quite likely there is going to be someone in earshot who has had an experience, you know, has been bereaved by suicide. And the other thing is, it's like a butt of a joke all the time. Oh, I might as well just go and slit my wrist. Like, it's not...
You're so right. Yeah, it's literally
no one says, like, oh, I might as well go and have a heart attack and die. No one says that. Because it's, like...
I know, it's it's funny, isn't it? It's like the way of dealing with it is to bring it into humour.
Yeah.
And so because it's such a frightening thing for people, it becomes a punchline because it's frightening.
Yeah.
And I similar, but not as bad, I think. I remember when we used to smoke, Jen and I.
Yeah.
And they would say, like, oh, who cares? I'll probably get cancer anyway. And I'd think, why are you, again, who are you talking to? But then I was smoking, so I think, I can't really judge.
Oh, can't really judge.
But still, people will make, less so these days, I think, about cancer. But they definitely, when we were at uni, there was this running gag of like, oh, well, I'll just probably, who cares? I'll get cancer and die. So what? I'm going to die anyway. That's what people always say to me. I'm going to die anyway. And I think, yeah, but trust me, there's definite ways that will be less horrific.
Yeah, there's good and bad ways to do it, guys.
And I think it is really, and again, like as we say so much, if you're not in the club, you don't know. And I think I'm definitely ignorant of talking about suicide and not being aware of it. And I think it's really, like you said, just have to, we have to have more conversations about it.
Yeah.
I mean, not that that magics it away, but I think it's definitely helpful for people to be aware.
It's just the whole, it's the whole thing, isn't it? So I think it's being more aware about that, but it's being more aware about mental health in the first place. And particularly, like, you know, sorry to bring it back to bloody feminism all the time, but in fairness, I haven't done that much here, but just in general in life.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, this is like one of my kind of feminist light bulb moments in my life, because I'm a bit like, shit, gender inequality is really bad for everyone, actually.
Yeah.
Because it's literally killing men. Yeah. It is literally killing men. And I think it's, you know, it's just really, really important, particularly for men, just to know that it's all right. It's okay.
It's all right to feel stuff.
Yeah, you can have a chat about it as well.
Yeah.
And if, you know, it makes someone uncomfortable, go and talk to someone else. You know.
That's such a good point. Just go and find someone else.
Yeah, or like, you know, if you can, you can pay people to listen to you talk about it. Unfortunately, you're going to have a bit of a mare trying to get it on the NHS. which
is a whole other rant for you.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, go and talk to someone else if Phil, putting that name out of the air, Phil's uncomfortable talking to you about
it. Phil. Something uncomfortable, Phil.
Yeah, I know. Always with you, Phil.
Jen, thank you so much for coming to talk to me about your brother, Stephen.
Thanks.
If you feel you need someone to talk to, you can contact the Samaritans free at any time on 116 123. That's in the UK and the Republic of Ireland. Or you can email them, jo@samaritans.org. For more information, look at their website, samaritans.org. And if you're listening to this and you're not in the UK or Ireland, please do Google your local mental health services, because as ever, you are not alone. You can follow Jen on Twitter at @inspireajen, and you can download the Standard Issue podcast on Acast or the Apple Podcast app. And you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast, or me at Lady Cariad. Music was provided by The Glue Ensemble, and the show was produced by Kate Holland. Remember, you are not alone.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.